and becomes a part of that sea of information, the sort of disembodied voice of humanity. And I was kind of, there are these living ships, like all that was really interesting. And then at some point he starts to see, and it's almost, I don't know, it was a Plato's cave kind of aspect to it or something, but he starts to see this sort of tunnel vision, this cave, and he realizes it's his mouth and he's becoming re-corporealized or something. He becomes a body again, and he kind of gets his time machine. Yeah. And
hold on.
Yeah.
At that same time, I was thinking about those hoovering heads he met in the first book, and they were in the second book. And I thought that...
Oh, the Watchers.
Yeah, the Watchers. Yeah. Like he was watching himself.
Yeah.
It's that reflection in the mirror. You go through to the other side of the mirror.
Yeah. Totally. Me too. I thought he was going to become a Watcher. This is Life, Death, Sci-Fi. Welcome. I'm here with a man who never leaves home without his fireplace poker. A man who would never drop his Kodak. A man who would never murder the future. A man who is never out of time. Eric, how you doing?
Fine, Chris. Thanks. We're here today to talk about The Time Ships by Stephen Baxter. And all of those things that you just mentioned about me, you would find in that story. I'm not sure if I'm always the man who is, you said, out of time?
Never out of time.
Never out of time. I've managed to use up some time here and there. And pokers are always good. What's the other one mentioned?
You'd never drop your Kodak.
Oh.
Yeah, he remembered the Kodak this time and then dropped it.
Yeah. As a time traveler, you need evidence of your time traveling. So if you're in the prehistoric times and dinosaurs are running around, you want your Kodak to take a picture of a dinosaur.
And the poker to fend them off. Yeah, stick it between the T-Rex's upper lower jaw there.
Part of time travel is that mystery that you reveal. And if you have evidence of your trip and you're trying to convince other people that you have time traveled, that's what you need. But nowadays, it's all fake news, right? It's all deep fakes that you can make up stories about anything. So what is real?
Yeah, it reminded me of a particular quote. I'm jumping to Moses here already, but yeah, when he said, what is real? Moses, who ends up being the time traveler's name, we find out, and he refers to his younger self as Moses. Its output is either music or fiction, and that of the moralizing, uplifting sort, which I have never found palatable, as I have become quite overwhelmed with the stream of trivia which masquerades as news. One can never tell precisely where a particle is or where it is heading.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. I like a lot of little things in The Time Ships by Stephen Baxter. An authorized centennial tribute to H.G. Wells. Wells is the time machine. I thought it was a good try. I see it has tons of great reviews.
I thought one is cool that it was published 100 years later, right? So this one in 1995, the original in 1895. I feel like if you like the original, you get pretty similar tone, right? From that original, I think Baxter really captures Wells's style. I haven't read any other Baxter. I was going to ask you if you did. We can come back to that. So I don't know if this is what his writing is like in all of his books, and he's pretty prolific. But I certainly thought it sounded a lot like Wells, or at least the narrator sounds like the same narrator. And so if you like that, if you like the original, I think you get the original plus three more novellas. Is it four times as long? Five times as long? Pretty long. Felt long in some parts, but if you like The Time Machine, I feel like you'd like this.
Yeah.
I think we had mixed feelings about The Time Machine too, right? Didn't we? We were a little on the fence there.
For what?
For the original, for The Time Machine.
Yeah, but what were we on the fence about?
As to whether how much we liked it.
Oh, okay. I really like The Time Machine by H.G. Wells.
Oh, okay.
I'm not on the fence about that. I'm on the fence about maybe is it hard science fiction or is it fantasy? I'm on the fence about that. This book, The Time Shifts by Stephen Baxter, was, in most of the reviews that I read, not many, was defined as hard science. I'm not sure I'm buying that. I'm not sure I'm buying the hard science part of this story because it's based on another story that I also had trouble with on the hard science part. It wouldn't be time traveling if that little piece of fantasy wasn't present in the second story. That little piece I'm talking about is the time travel goo.
Platter Knight.
Yeah. So I'm not so sure. That seems a little bit like the magic potion that you break in front of the big boss that you're fighting in the video game.
Sounds like something out of a Marvel or DC comic, right? Magical goo that changes everything. For me, that raises a question as to whether can time travel ever be hard science?
That's a good question. As we explore time travel, books that we read, let's figure that out. We as people want to believe that time travel is true because there's so many great stories about it.
Pretty messy. It's pretty messy, as we'll see here. But yeah, would I like time travel to be possible?
You already said that you were going to go forward in time.
I wouldn't know if I would have gone this forward. Yeah. Wow. Should we
was
try
it
to...
forward or was it backward?
It was both. It was forward, backward, forward.
Yo-yo,
again.
Yeah.
Should we, should we summarize a little bit and try to.
Okay. Let's give it a shot. And you jump in anytime you want to on this. It starts right at the end of H.G. Wells' novel. I mean, there he is in the workshop. He's all excited about talking to his friends. And now he's back in his workshop. He's grabbing all of the stuff that he forgot in the first place. And he's going. And by gosh, he does. He goes.
And eventually there's going to be spoilers here. There will be spoilers in Life, Death, Sci-Fi. He goes after Weena.
That's
so he's
his
going
mission.
Back to save her. That's the...
Absolutely.
Propelling.
He's in his machine. He goes back to the same time. And it's different. And that right there, as a reader, I was thinking, oh, okay. This changes everything. So he meets a new race of Morlocks. And
he goes past, he realizes, because the sun goes out, right?
Yeah.
So the sun blackens. He realizes as he's traveling that this sort of past future, the previous version of the future with Weena is no longer in existence, that he must have changed things through his travel. And then he keeps going and arrives at this new version, as you said, a new Morlock world.
Yeah.
The Morlocks are still there, but yeah.
And let's put a pin in that because every time travel discussion has to talk about the butterfly effect and what that means in the idea of time travel. But okay, so he's going back to rescue Weena. He gets into this alternative reality because he's already been there once, but he realizes he's not going back to the same place. He arrives, and there are Morlocks there. This introduction to the new Morlocks really upset me. I had a hard time with our main character for the rest of the story.
Oh, okay.
He brutally attacks a young Morlock, almost kills him.
Yeah.
And the description about how he did that and what it felt like was almost too much for him. Really?
I think he didn't know, though. He didn't know. He does express some regret. I don't want to defend him because I think, where is it? My research took me to, we exchanged a couple of texts about this, Paul Wandeson, I think his name, has this blog, time2timetravel.com. I don't know if he's British. I thought it was a British vibe to that blog post, but he says the main character is a complete and utter pillock.
Yeah.
which I had to look up. I might start using that from now on, but it's just somebody who's really insufferable. And I find him very insufferable throughout. I found him insufferable in the first book. And part of that, I think, I agree. He's just, I guess, unenlightened in a sense in the way he treats this group that's very different from himself. And even though I think in that moment, he feels a little bad when he finds out that they're children. Throughout the story, like he's repulsed by, I'm sure about to introduce him, this Nebo Gipfel character. Do you pronounce it that way? Because we always have to
Nebo
talk about
Gipfel.
Our pronunciations. Yeah.
Nebo Gipfel.
Nebo Gipfel. Okay.
I'm fine with that. Such a strange name. Anyway, yes. Yes. Okay. So he's on this plant rescue unit. He gets into a new Morlock land. The first thing he does when he gets there is commit a hideous crime, and he finds himself in just a room of light.
Yeah. That was cool. Prison of light. Yeah.
Yeah. This opens up into a whole world of nanites and how the Morlocks have developed this technology, and the Dyson spheres that cover the sun and are a continuous ring around the sun, these areas where people live. One of the things that I found really fascinating is when he finally gets out of his prison of light, he goes with his new Morlock friend, Nebo Gipfel, and there's another ring that's separate from the Morlock ring, and he says, that's where the humans are, and it's just exploding with wars. So there's a war reference. In almost every section of this book, there's a reference to war. It's a kind of a warning to the human race. Hey, we like our wars. In The Time Machine by Wells, I don't think there were any references to war. I find it interesting that this book is heavy in war themes.
So that's book one, right? And this is broken into a number of books. And it's called The Dark Knight because it's all dark in the future.
Yeah, because the sun is covered, and that's how they get their energy. The Dyson sphere makes the energy for these rings around the solar system. Our time traveler finds out a way to escape these Dyson spheres, and Nebo Gipfel grabs onto the machine and goes with him as a stowaway. He's trying to get back to his own time, and he doesn't quite get there. It's all changed again. It's a world at war. It's a little later than his own time, but it's still in a recognizable era for our time traveler. But everything's changed. What's worse is that they have multiple time machines now that they're getting ready to go out and wage a time war, which would be even crazier. They don't like this, and they find a way to escape this place.
They go back to just a few years before he invents the time machine, and then they go into the future to like 1944. Book two is like the paradox where he goes to meet his former self with Nebo Gipfel, and then this juggernaut. It's also a time ship of sorts, time machine. This juggernaut, the knot, arrives from the future, and it's like the 1944 future. And it takes them to 1944. This is book three, the war with the Germans. And they're in this, I don't know where they land exactly, but outside of London, they take this train into the dome, the London Dome.
Yeah.
And it's this period, like you're saying, where the British are at war, Europe's at war, the British are at war with the Germans, and they're fighting using, I don't know if they're really, how much they're using those machines to, the time machines to fight at that
they're
moment.
They're getting ready to do that.
They're about
they
to,
can't get enough of the magic goo.
Yeah. They're
trying to find a way. When he first escapes with Nebo Gipfel, and Nebo Gipfel is a stowaway, he goes back to his own time. I was wrong on that. He goes back to his own time, finds himself just before he builds or finishes the machine, and tries to convince him. This was the thing. He's trying to convince him not to do it. And his young self is surly, and why shouldn't I? That's none of your business, really. And then the juggernaut comes. Yeah. Because it is steampunky. It gives total steampunk. And the woman who was the commander there was like a strong character. And I really like that part. So what happens, they go back to London, and then they escape again to the far way back into history.
Yeah, so they go, the Germans bomb the dome, and they're about
just
to destroy London. Yeah, there's some other ships they're making, which weren't quite loaded with Platternite, and they go and grab a little bit, just enough of it, get it in this time ship, and they escape to the... And I think it's the machine's like broken, right? So they can't stop it. Oh, the controls weren't installed yet. So they're able to take off, but they can't choose the time period.
Yeah,
or
classic time travel problem.
Yeah, the trope.
Stop.
The hero, oops, I broke it. So they end up in the Paleocene era. So they're 50 million years earlier.
And they find a rescue party, who was also that team that came to get them in the earlier times. Everything's broken. They're stuck there. And they're trying to create a town. And then the time war heats up, and a German Messerschmitt comes and tries to blow everything up, but it crashes. So then Nebogipfel is so smart for Morlock, right?
Yeah.
He's so smart. He takes pieces of all of these broken machines, puts it together with the magic goo, and they can escape there. But again, the controls aren't perfect, and they just fly into the far future. And this far future is a little different than the far future of the original time travel. It seems like the same dark, lonely planet, but it seems like there are these kind of ant hills of something, and they're rescued because it's so cold and dark that they would die, but they're rescued by one of these ant hills, and Nebogipfel hooks into them and figures out what the deal is. And now our planet is just covered in nanites, and they all communicate with what seems like even the universe. And what happens from there is they realize that they can't go back. What's the purpose? So these nanites who speak now to Nebogipfel has figured out how to communicate with them. They say, okay, what we want to do is we want to take this time machine and we want to go where no man, no nanite has ever been, and go into the future and see what it's like, maybe even past the future.
They want to go to the beginning of time, right?
Yeah, they want to go to the beginning of time, and then maybe even beyond. What's out there? The description of the journey through time on the ships is pretty interesting. They end up beyond time. Suddenly, a shining original time machine from H.G. Wells appears, and he can go back home. They're beyond time. They've gone to the beginning, past that. Now he's found his time machine again, and he can go back home. Goes back home. It never happened. And of course, he goes on his original mission to find Weena, and he does.
This is the first time he knows how to make up for his mistakes in all of his travels. So he finally rescues her.
Yay, the mission is accomplished. And the book ends with, and now I'm going to find out about these Morlocks.
There's a lot to summarize, right? We're looking at 7 books it's one book, but he's got broken up into 7 books and an epilogue. It's a lot. It's a lot. It may be hard. It's like, where do you start? Where do we start this discussion? There's so much to talk about, so many things to talk about. So we've summarized it. We've got book 1, The Dark Knight, book 2, This Paradox, book 3, The War with the Germans, book 4, The Paleocene Sea, book 5, White Earth, book 6, The Time Ships, book 7, Day 292,495,940 is the day. What do you think of that sequencing? Any broad question there. Did it work for you? Or why do you think Baxter chose to move in those directions. We get this really yo-yoing through time. Obviously, it does circle back to where he started with Weena, but like he does echo back. But I don't know. And side note, I don't know how I feel about this. It's almost like this Zelda, the princess is in another castle. He's going to save the princess sort of story that he ends up with in the damsel in distress kind of thing. But like, just a little mini rant, but I don't understand the fascination with Weena. She seemed like a real, it's almost like disturbing. There's like childlike, almost like prepubescent creatures that, is he in love with her? It implies that he has feels some sort of love, but he's not in love with her in the original.
No, it was more like a creature, like a rescue dog, maybe. I don't know. I got that kind of vibe. Yeah. I have to rescue this creature.
She's innocent. Okay. He's trying to save his soul, redeem himself in some way. He's really arguably messed things up. Maybe not. I guess that's a different question. At some point, it's really questions whether he's messed everything up through his time travels, and this is a way to redeem that. But
I don't know. The way that the main character, time traveler, treated Nebigiphthel, the Morlock, all through the book, and then this kind of obsession with Weena at the end, I agree with you. It did not have the same kind of vibe as the first book when the time traveler was talking about Weena. So that was like a disconnect.
Yeah, and he spends all this time with Nebigiphthel. Should be a real bromance there or something. He's traveled all throughout time, and both of them have been disembodied, right, and become part of this sea of information, and yet he's the only soul he can talk to. And then they have this abrupt sort of departure. Seems like he should have, go save Weena and then get Nebigiphthel back to his home, right?
Yeah, because he messed it all up. But again, Nebigiphthel, he was a stowaway. It was his choice. And I think it was also his choice to go on the 7 ship's journey.
Maybe I'm misremembering that. I thought it was more like he was just trying to stop the time traveler and reaches out and then ends up getting caught in the machine, not realizing he wasn't really choosing to go with him. It was more like he was caught in the moment of trying to stop him, wasn't that? Maybe I'm misremembering that.
I think they had a discussion about that. Why did you come with me? How you're a stowaway, that kind of. So I got the stowaway vibe. You got that he just tried to stop him and got hauled along.
Yeah, you're right.
I like both of those stories, both of those ideas. Okay.
Yeah. What do you think of the books, the yo-yoing through time?
I think it's right to say yo-yoing through time. And I think that the next books that we read about time travel are going to have some yo-yoing as well. I think that might be a standard of time travel. I go forward. I go back. I want to go home. I go forward. I go back. I'm not sure. I think it's in the nature of the story when you can do that. But the treatment of the characters in the time ships, I think, doesn't really match the treatment of the characters in the first book. As the characters are developed, they still didn't match the tone or the idea in the first book. The characters branched off into their own kind of different reality or character. They developed into their own character different than the first book. Did I like the characters in the second book? Not especially. I thought the time travelers was obviously prejudiced against the Morlock, Nebigiphthel, who was trying to help him the whole way. Yeah, and that was difficult to read because, like your reviewer, he was.
Pillock.
That's better than the word I was thinking. I like the steampunk part, war with the. I don't like war. I don't really read war novels, but the steampunk part of that was cool. The domes, all of that kind of stuff.
Where would you spend, if you had to spend time in any of those
worlds,
where would you spend your time?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Would you like to be stranded?
Oh, where would I like to be stranded? See, none of them. I didn't love any of the worlds or the settings. I thought they were interesting to visit. Maybe Airbnb, spend a weekend. But no, I'm not living in any of those places.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't want to live anywhere, any of those either.
Where would I like to be stranded? I don't know. See, that's my idea about time travel. I'd like to just go visit, spend a weekend, catch the vibes, and then go back home. That's the kind of time traveler I am.
Like a Ray Bradbury's Sound of Thunder? Just a little tour?
Yeah. Tourist.
Yeah, I enjoyed the steampunk aspects as well. I thought it was a nice, fun to visualize those ships and the people with their epaulets. Is that how you say that? Epaulets?
I can just see it, can't you? All crusty and dirty from battle and stomping around and taking control.
I'd hang out with Hillary Bond with her scar on her chin. And
Man. In the movie version, I'm sure she'll have an eye patch too.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Who would play her in a movie? Charlize Theron or something like that.
Oh,
that
nice.
That would work. There's some introduction of what I read somewhere. It was like deliberate values dissonance where they're, she was a woman because they wouldn't have, from his era, there wouldn't have been woman soldiers. And in fact, they're in our 1945, our history, there were not women soldiers, at least not in World War I or II. I shouldn't say that. I suppose in some parts people are guerrilla warfare or something, or maybe, but not enlisted in the army. Certainly not captain.
You're digging a hole there.
No.
A little bit of a hole.
No, I'm not.
If I was a woman in the resistance, I would tell you that I was in the war. I was a soldier in the war. I think maybe not enlisting in a platoon or in.
Yeah, whatever. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. Of course, they were super key as anybody in the war efforts. I just mean that Baxter's introducing a captain who's a woman during this war around the time of World War II. She's leading her troop there.
Yeah. As he left her, she was the leader of the group of people that were stranded in the distant past. These people created a new past or a new future. These people created a new future that affected them in their journeys forward.
Yeah, and that was cool because I thought that was interesting, right? So if they were to go back, end up being stranded, they have all this knowledge. And so it's quote unquote civilization, or it's as if the 19th, let's say it takes them a while, 100 years to get things rolling, but it's as if the 19th century started 50 million years ago.
Yes.
So then they have that 50 million years of development that then completely changes the future. And that's why we get another future that's different than Nebo Gipfel's with these. I mean, they're like, it's AI, right? When we get to book five and six with the White Earth and the time ships, the Spite, Sea of Info, it's like there's no humans like we are today that still exist. And yet it's just, Nebo Gipfel argues it's just an evolution of humanity.
Yeah.
And we're all now a part of reminded me of almost like the Borg or something from Star Trek without any sort of fleshy body. It's just.
You just gave us a Star Trek reference, and I don't know, Star Wars is a little jealous. Where's that?
Yeah, I don't know how we tie Star Wars in here.
This is a grand sweeping book, and like you say, it yo-yos back and forth through the vastness of space and time. For me, in order to finish this book, I had to pick pieces and parts that I hang on to and I like. I like the steampunk. I didn't like the character, the main character. But like you say, maybe it was that way just to wake me up, to make me mad.
Maybe. Yeah. Is it satirical at all in that regard? Maybe it's a little bit of a throwback to some old novels. I don't know, Gulliver's Travels or something. It has that sort of, we're not really liking or following those characters, but mostly there's some societal critique is focus. I do feel like, so maybe Baxter is operating in that vein, and he seems to be more interested in, and I think this is maybe deserves praise for this, he is pushing things to the extreme. So with this sort of yo-yoing that happens, we see an extreme, pretty creative vision of the future. And then they go all the way back to beyond really what we would consider beyond, again, creative, very imaginative portrayal of the sort of beginnings of time. And so he seems to be exploring ideas and exploring extremes, and then really doesn't take the time to develop characters. Not a whole lot in the way of even plot or characters. It's about, let's explore some ideas here.
Yeah, I definitely can go along with that.
Which is a lot of sci-fi.
I would like to read a few more time travel books and see how this one fits in there.
Yeah.
As an authorized centennial tribute to H.G. Wells, The Time Machine, like I said in the beginning, I think it was a good try. I'm not loving it as a sequel, like parts of it, but I don't know. You say you thought the character followed along with the original. You could see him fit together.
Yeah. But I wasn't a huge fan of the original. So to me, these are on par. It's just one's much longer than the other. If anything, really, I love the original because it's so fascinating for it to have been published when it was, and what an interesting idea. I think Wells deserves praise for that. I like the idea of him coming back and telling the story to a dinner party. I found that fascinating. I think the idea that humans split into a couple of races, while interesting, it seems totally far-fetched and unrealistic and fantastical to me. I don't think it was for him in that era. I think it made sense when he, as a evolutionary biologist kind of influence there, totally makes sense. I think the idea that would happen today, we would think that doesn't make any sense. I thought it was really too simplified. And so I didn't really enjoy the Morlocks or the Eloi of the original so much. I guess I didn't love spending time in those worlds. I found it really too far-fetched for me. And I didn't like the protagonist in the original. So I felt like I didn't like him much here either. So it makes it hard to like it. Of course, he's the narrator. So we're getting his voice and his perspective throughout. How interesting or how different would it be if Andy Weir had written this? If we get one of his...
Now we're switching authors. That's an interesting idea.
Like we're going to the same places, but it's Andy Weir and it's one of his protagonists, full of all their humor and totally different voice there.
Yeah, I would.
There's this weird sort of, we say like in a critical, kind of cold, distant description or viewpoint that it's almost like the narrator comes off as superior in some ways, I think, throughout. Almost.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's an old world prejudice there. And maybe that's what he was going for, because this is turn of the century and people did have deep prejudices then. But did that have to be such a big part of the story? Because that character was dripping in it.
I felt like that was true in the first one. So where Baxter is, I would argue, successful in recreating the style and tone of that Wells had in the original. I think it does continue that. Even though it's, let's say, anachronistic or out of time, it's publishing it in 1995, I'm sure, I would think he was much more would have had more sensitivity to, maybe I'm misremembering the mid-90s. I guess there was a lot of, were we all less, oh dear, dare I say it, woke back then?
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
It wouldn't have felt if he had a different, unless he decided to continue with, let's say it was the grandson, right? Or the great grandson of Moses, right? Then of the time traveler. Then he could have really, but it would have felt very different, right? It wouldn't have felt like so much a tribute.
Okay. I'm going to have to think about that because I have, that's why I didn't like this character in the second book, is because it was so full of that. It was, what, 5 or 6 books of the first one. So you got a little taste of it in the first book, but then you got the big dose in the second. And yeah. I guess that's what I'm talking about. This overwhelming sense, I didn't like it. The first book, I could just say, okay, it is part, he did write it during the time of these feelings, so I can understand that. The second book, written as a sequel and a centennial to the time machine, that's why I didn't like this character in the second book, is because it was so full of that. It was, what, 5 or 6 books of the first one. So you got a little taste of it in the first book, but then you got the big dose in the second.
I think what you're saying is you really wish that Baxter had channeled some George Lucas or Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. Had this character been a little more, say, I don't know, Luke Skywalker, with some sort of character development and arc and a hero's journey, then we could have felt something for him. But he does all this traveling through time and space and ends up exactly where he started. And I mean, in terms of his character.
In terms of his character. Yeah, he's experienced all these things that no other human ever has, and it didn't change him. It didn't make a difference.
But maybe
all except he won't. He's got to rescue Aweena. He's got to do that.
And that, well, maybe that's a cynical take. Maybe Baxter's just pretty cynical on a bit of a misanthrope there, and it's just a cynical take. Man's not going to change. Humans won't change. There, see this guy? He sees it all. He still won't change.
Oh yeah, that is cynical. I like it less that way.
Yeah. Although, if it makes the point, it's hard to know if that was intentional. I guess the other thing with the ending that I didn't love, and I'm sure this is part of it for you, is he goes into the future, and instead, again, of being somewhat sympathetic to the Morlocks, he's going to go down there and it seems like kill them all, right? He's trying to just protect the Eloi. Shouldn't he try to help the Morlocks understand, given that he sees their capacity? And why
the ending was weird for me, for all the reasons that we just said.
It doesn't make it out, it seems.
I don't think he ever thought he was. Oh, interesting, that's an idea you have on your notes here: time travel insights. And for our time travel season, I think that should be like a highlighted part of our show. And now it's time for time travel insights. One of the insights I had was that I'm really trying to understand the idea of time travel. And I started my personal journey by reading a lot of time travel books. I thought, oh, cool. And I've watched a lot of time travel movies. Oh, that's cool. Now, this idea of how multiple universes and time travel look the same a little bit to me. And then you throw in the butterfly effect, then we'll split off and change or start a new universe. So what happens if you want to change that back to the way it all was? Can you do that?
I think.
Okay. I just watched this movie called Vortex. In Vortex, there's this detective, and his wife is pushed off this cliff onto the beach, dies. They live in the part of France on the ocean. 17 years later, technology has developed into this really cool thing. You put on these glasses, and you can that's super advanced virtual reality glasses, and he can see the crime scene reconstructed. So he's looking around at the crime scene, and his wife comes walking on the beach from the past. So it's the past meeting the future. And they connect and talk about this. And of course, he wants his wife to not be murdered. But in the 17 years in between, he's got a new life. He's got a new wife. He's got a new son. He's got the daughter he had with his old wife. And they've made a life. Now, if he changes that and she doesn't die, what happens? Does his wife and son disappear?
It's like Back to the Future with the photographs and
exactly. These insights, these time travel insights, get very messy. Like you said before, how do we even think about these things?
Yeah, it really makes your head spin. I feel like there's a point where, and a part of that for me too, that's part of the, I hope by the end of this season, I'll be better equipped and understand it better. I think this book, I guess I don't know in terms of when this was published compared to other ideas. Some of the things I read, it seems to suggest that this idea of the multiplicity of histories was somewhat unique to this novel, maybe. The idea that there were all these different, so many different, should we say, threads of time or different paths. And that I think by when they arrive to White Earth, right? And they're about to take these sort of space yachts back. What do they call them? The Universal Constructors?
Yes, the Universal Constructors.
And go on. Yeah, and so these universal structures go back, and
they're probably just Legos, but yeah, smart Legos.
Yeah, they go back and find the piece to the resistance, and these universal constructors, they go back so far as to discover or to end up figuring out that there's one, if I'm understanding this right, ideal version of all time that helps keep everything together in a way that it loops.
Okay, right there. I got the going back to the beginning. But then when he started talking about loops and all of that, I thought it was just kind of smoke and mirrors to get us past that beginning.
At some point, that's the paradox, right? Is that and I don't know why he makes this choice, but the time traveler, and I thought this was a cool description. Sounds like you liked it too, where I enjoyed the part where they travel back to the beginning, and that he becomes disembodied and becomes a part of that sea of information, the sort of disembodied voice of humanity. And I was kind of, there are these living ships, like all that was really interesting. And then at some point, he starts to see, and it's almost, I don't know, there's a Plato's cave kind of aspect to it or something, but he starts to see this sort of tunnel vision, this cave, and he realizes it's his mouth, and he's becoming re-corporealized or something, becomes a body again, and he kind of gets his time machine. Yeah. And
hold on.
Yeah.
At that same time, I was thinking about those hoovering heads.
The what?
The hoovering heads that he met in the first book, and they were in the second book. And I thought that.
Oh, the Watchers.
Yeah, the Watchers.
Yeah.
Like he was watching himself. It's that reflection in the mirror. You go through to the other side of the mirror.
Yeah, totally. Me too. I thought he was going to become a Watcher. And I was like, okay, interesting. That's what. And we got to come back to that. We got to talk about the Watchers. Yeah, before, after this. But, and so he ends up in his time machine again. It's reconstructed. A gift to him in a way, you would think. And then he makes this choice to then go back to himself in 1887 or something, or what's the original?
I can't remember.
Late 19th century. But he goes back and gives himself the Platter Knight to begin this whole thing again. Yes. And thus,
classic,
seals the circle.
Time. Yeah. Go ahead and say that again.
It seals the circle, right? The circle is, returned or whatever. Like it's.
And that's classic time travel stuff. You meet yourself, giving you the thing that you need to start this journey so you can meet yourself. It was like Desolation Row had that kind of time travel vibe, meeting yourself, coming back and giving yourself something that there was a character in that story that we read. A lot of time travel stories have that kind of.
Yeah. Dark, that great series on. Did you watch Dark?
No.
Oh, you got to watch that. Oh, yeah, that's a must watch. It's translated. It's dubbed. You could watch it in translation, but it's on Netflix. Time travel. Yeah, that's excellent. Without spoiling it, it really attempts in the end to try to weave all these timelines together. I think it's super well done, but I would say each season, maybe I enjoyed it a little bit less in some ways just because they're really trying to close the circle in a way that makes sense, and it's so hard to do.
Yeah.
And so it begins with there's a cave and there's something mysterious and somebody disappears, and then I won't give away too much, but it's really cool the way it starts to kind of roll out what's happening in this strange small town in Germany. It eventually becomes a story that spans generations, and then they try to close the circle, and the characters are trying to close the circle. They're all trying to do it in their own way. It really makes your head spin. No pun intended, but worth watching. That's a good one. That's a good one. Dark. Yeah.
Okay. I think though probably the best idea about time travel that has come forward is the butterfly effect, and we talked about that earlier.
Yeah, which I guess raises questions about individual sort of agency. Fate, free will versus fate, right? How much can we really change or control? Is it all fated, right? Can it be still fated if such a little change can create a butterfly effect? Or were we always meant to create that butterfly effect? It's hard to say. What did you make of the Watchers? Because I don't think I understand who or what they are. I thought maybe they would end up being the universal constructors. And in the end, I don't think that was clear. Like you, I thought maybe he would become one. And that wasn't clear. I can read a brief little description of him there. And well, he sees these when he's traveling in a time machine that he's watching. And I still think that was pretty cool just to be able to see. I like those descriptions of time moving, how things are speeding along, but in a way that he's able to see. Almost a Sims or video game type construction, right, of the world as he travels through time. And these Watchers appear, and there he describes them as a ball of flesh, a hovering head, two bunches of tentacles which dangled like grotesque fingers, fleshy beak, making a noise, a low murmuring babble like a river. And rivers are clear symbols for life, right? Eyes were human. So we got this human eye head with tentacles and a fleshy beak. It's like, what? What? It's.
Do I have this right? He only sees these when he is traveling through time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So these creatures are like the pilot fish on a whale following him through the washes of time in whatever direction he's going. we could be the watchers, or the time traveler could be the watcher watching himself. I think in the end, yeah, be looking at himself. And all of that universe of the beginning of things, there was a watcher, and he was there also. So maybe it was a part of him. I don't know. It was interesting that something would bob up alongside, maybe like a dolphin alongside of a boat that you're sailing. But I don't know. What do you think?
I wasn't sure. That's why I found that a little bit of dissatisfying. I didn't feel like that was resolved for me. I think it's if you introduce a gun, the Chekhov idea, then that gun should be used or appear in some way. And I felt like these watchers were there now and again, and I didn't feel like there was any meaningful ambiguity there. He seems to have a weird thing. They're grotesque fingers, and the Morlocks have these worm-like fingers. And I don't know, maybe Baxter thinks fingers are weird. You don't watch Succession, do you?
No.
Oh.
You do?
Yeah. It's great show. Oh, it's so good. And there was a great line in the last episode where the mother starts going off about eyes, and she calls them like face eggs. They're gross, fleshy things. Everybody's got these face eggs. And I thought, yeah, maybe Baxter's got this thing about fingers or something. They're just
could be an author and, thing.
And worms, but
and worms.
I don't know. I don't know why they're there. I always feel like I'm glad I've read something, because you get to have these discussions, and it's maybe something I wouldn't have read otherwise. I'm not a terribly picky reader, I think, for the most part. Love to read. But it is one of those for me where it's I don't know. I guess what's going to stay with me here? I've read this. It's not the characters. It's not the Paleocene era. It's not the war with the Germans. I do feel like these future beings, the sea of information, raises questions as to is the disembodied future for humans really raises questions about what it means to be human. I kept thinking about the story of like Theseus's ship, this idea of the ship of Theseus, where sort of Western philosophical thing where if you have a ship and you over time kind of rebuild the ship to the point where none of the original pieces of the ship are still a part of the ship, is it still the same ship? Right.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
And so, with humans, we're shedding our cells and stuff all the time. And at what point are we no longer humans or ourselves? He ends up in this future where he should have died from the cold, and they're able to rebuild him with all new cells and everything. And so is he still himself? And he sure seems like his same Pillock self to us. At what point with AI and all this are we, where does the soul begin and end? And is there a soul? And what makes us who we are?
I am right with you on that. I felt that was probably for my own thought experiments, that was an interesting part. I enjoyed the steampunky kinds of things and a couple other passages that I like. But this part that you're speaking of is close enough to what's even going on now with AI that it bears some thought in reading. Yeah, I'm glad I read that. I'm glad I have that as part of my experience to put into my thought experiments about time travel and about the future of humanity, because that is coming at us real fast. I think we almost started Life, Death, Sci-Fi on the steps of evolution or time, and say, stop me if I'm messing up this story. So we're standing on this staircase with, say, a primate, a monkey, who has very similar DNA to us, lots of understanding, but doesn't understand the world as we do.
Right.
We're more advanced in that way. We can understand technology and other kinds of things that this primate, this monkey, can't. So we go up a couple of steps, and the things that we do that monkey thinks is magic. And now we're standing on the steps with our AI glasses, our virtual reality glasses. And what is the next step? Are the glasses going to go up the staircase and the AI technology going up the staircase and look to us like magic? Is that already happening?
Yeah, that's the argument. You're referring to the wait, but why articles that we read and then started talking about in Beijing Brewery, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're right there. We won't. I think it argues that we wouldn't know it when it was happening. It'd be too late. And I think it sure seems like it's whatever's going to happen there has certainly started. Did you come up with some devices that you really enjoyed? Do you have your top three?
I couldn't get three. I couldn't get three. I like the magic time travel goo.
Oh, the Platter Knight?
The Platter Knight. Don't leave home without it. You got to have an extra little vial in your pocket.
There's a Morlock tool with the green flash. There's the sphere around the sun.
Oh, the dice.
That kind of, yeah, that floor that can reconstruct into anything, like create food or make babies. That in that Morlock world, Nebuchadnezzar's got a bit of a space yacht that he can go anywhere. They just have faith that they push it off and it'll go right to the spot. I think there was a space elevator, kind of like the foundation that comes up. That he just sees it in passing, and then.
That's all part of the Dyson spheres.
Yeah.
Things that cover the sun that give energy and all of that. Yeah. To me, those were older ideas. I'd seen them in other stories before. So I wasn't wild about that.
I'll give you the ones I really liked. One which is not original, but the CDV, the chronic displacement vehicle. I just think it'd be pretty cool. That would be a cool steampunk thing to see. Here's an idea. Put some wheels on that time machine. Now I can move her. You don't have to be in the exact same spot so many thousands of years later. So that would be one. Second one, I love that in the billiards room, that multiplicity generator.
Oh.
And I was like, what is this? What's going on and stuff? And he can't figure it out. At first, I was just like, I don't know if I'm getting there. And then when he realizes, and of course, we realize that it's actually a way of showing multiple timelines, I was like, oh, that's really cool. So that'd be a cool device. And then I think
you've seen that before, though. You've seen something like that before in one of the novels that we read, Chinese author, Three
Body Problem.
Oh. They had a pool table there, too, that he was getting signals from. I don't know if you remember how the pool table was not working the way it should. And then they theorized from that what was going on and what was coming.
That was published later. There are some sites, maybe I can link to those in the show notes. I'll link to that Wait But Why stuff as well. There are quite a few references that Baxter makes that some people point out where he is trying to tribute sci-fi, many different sci-fi ideas throughout.
Okay.
And I guess my last one, like top three, it would have to be the space yachts that the Universal Constructors make that are like living ships, right? That's a pretty cool idea. So after you've re-embodied and traveled back to 1873 and you're sipping your brandy under a candlelight mixed with the radioactive glow of Platter Knight. Or perhaps you prefer to travel to 1944 for a whiskey and water in Dr. Wallace's smoking room. Or maybe you're more enlightened and you've grabbed a small piece of fruit, perhaps an apple and a glass of water and made your way like Nebuchadnezzar to the darkest corner of the room. At whatever time and place and refreshment you choose, what will you be discussing?
I think I would probably be talking about the multiverse versus how the butterfly effect fits in with the multiverse. And is it even possible? Is it conceivable to have so many different timelines? Is it also possible to walk between them? I don't know. I think that's a great mind experiment.
Yeah, I need to explore that more myself. Yeah, I think for me, I've been reading Harry Potter with my daughter, who's now on book four.
And that's awesome.
She's so into it and really reading that on her own, which I'm very proud of. And of course, we're reading it together. And I've never read Harry Potter. And it turns out in the third book, Prisoner of Azkaban, there's time travel. Oops, spoiler. And I saw the movies ages ago, just one time, didn't really remember it. And so I was pretty fun to discover. And then days later, she would say, but how, if they went back in time, how were they there the first time to throw the pebbles through the windows? What happened the first time? And I was saying, well, first time, they wouldn't have been able to save them the very first time. And now we're just stuck in this loop and we're seeing that loop. But I found myself trying to explain, think about the exact same things from this book. And it's just really hard to kind of deal with that kind of paradox, right? This paradoxical loop that's created, challenging.
The last couple books that we've read have been historical. And before these books, I was really excited about time travel. I was really excited about reading more stories about time travel. Now, I don't know. I'm not that jazzed about it as I was. I will have to see with the next few books that we read about time travel if that changes for me. Because I'm not fully understanding the concept, even after reading at least 10 time travel stories, watching at least, I don't know, 20 stories on TV about time travel. I'm still not understanding it. I'm still confused. And I'm starting to believe that maybe it's just a fantasy.
Interesting. I only got a couple minutes. What?
Yeah.
You got a couple? I got suggestions for our next book?
I looked through a bunch of stories and then I started thinking, oh, are we going to do the historical thing or are we just going to go for stories that are hard science? Or I'm still stuck in the hard science fantasy kind of thing, because this to me was called hard science. And I'm sorry, I think it's close to fantasy. But that's my attitude now, too. So no, I didn't find anything because I had all of these other problems to get through. So I'm really open to anything that you find. I don't want to be like the weak link here or anything. But
I'll give you a quick rundown. And I went back to that old list we had from BuzzFeed that we started with. And I was like, okay, what are some listed on there? Then I read the comics. I read through the comments. And people are pretty critical about whether many of those were sci-fi or not. But it's something we started with. I think there's still a part of me that really wants to finish that. Regardless, that list. So here's the ones from that list. Slaughterhouse-Five, which we've read, but we never really recorded a podcast on. That was ages ago. And I don't know if we really discussed it that thoroughly.
Let me stop you there. Because I'm reading this, thinking about time travel, and all of this, I really do keep coming back to Slaughterhouse-Five. Okay. How he keeps popping around in his own life.
Yeah,
okay, let's do it. Slaughterhouse-Five.
Easy. All right.
Okay.
Sounds good. All right. Excited.
See you at the Spaceman's Ball, man.
See you at the Spaceman's Ball. All right. Nice chatting.
One, two, five.